back.
That's good vampire music.
That is. We're having a lot of fun tonight trying to keep things together, and a lot of you are actually going this weekend to Halloween parties. I've talked to several people who are getting dressed up and ready to go. And in this bleak economic environment, I hope people can get out and have a good time. That'll be nice. Some of the pumpkin carving has been pretty wild.
Very wild.
I understand one of the most popular costumes of all is the, I guess you can kind of make them up at home, but it's the Sarah Palin outfit.
Yes.
Not to mention the Unknown Henson costume, which...
Yeah, that's what I'm going to wear this year.
Well, you know about this man, Gordon? You know about the artist, Unknown Henson?
No.
Oh.
I thought we shared that with Gordon last.
No, maybe we should... Maybe we should give him a little taste of Unknown Henson. Unknown Henson, you know how vampires, all of you know that their top canines are their puncture teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Unknown is kind of, it's his bottom canine teeth that are the only ones left. And it's a kind of an upside-down vampire motif.
Right. He's a country singer, actually. Now, Gordon, I wanted to ask this question.
He's not either country. He transcends all limits of music. He's
all right, king of all media. Okay.
That's, there you go.
Now, we have the tradition, rightly or wrongly, it's been perpetuated by films, that if you are confronted by a vampire, you hold up the crucifix, you hold up the garlic, you sprinkle the holy water. What do they do in Asia? When these blood-sucking ghosts, what kind of object or ritual do they go through, or
it's a Taoist prayer that's written on a piece of paper, sort of like a talisman, but it's a oblong piece of paper, and you have some stickum on it, and you, as the vampire approaches you, you whip out the piece of paper and stick it on his forehead. And
oh,
so the paper hangs down over his face.
That's
the way you immobilize them.
Now, my book, Real Ghosts, Restless Spirits, Haunted Places, I get a lot of really nice email on that, but some people have criticized that I don't have any Japanese ghosts in there. Well, I wouldn't presume to try to explain another culture, but I thought I'd better get into it. And so I've been watching a lot of Japanese horror films. And with Japanese ghost, it seems you don't even have to go inside. You don't have to anger the ghost or be there. You can just walk by a house, and the thing can follow you wherever you are, the elevator, your office, or whatever. Now, is that kind of the same tradition with the vampire ghost? Is that you don't have to do anything to tick it off, or it will just come after you of its own volition?
Wait, you've got two different vampires in Japan. One is there are several folklore vampires that are kind of unique to Japan, and the other is a Japanese version of the Western vampire, and that one has actually become the most popular in recent years. And there's a number of the Japanese anime and manga that have come out along that line, but
right,
overwhelmingly, the main vampire in Japan now is a westernized vampire that's been adapted to Japanese culture.
Is that the one that first takes the form of a fox, or is that yet another one?
No, that's one of the more traditional ones. There's a fox and a cat, and there's a water creature called a kappa that has a head that holds water, and so the top of the head is shaped like a cup, and the way you defeat it is by spilling the water.
Well, at least there's something. So, again, it's kind of the symbol of water, creativity, purity, and so forth. As,
right, the kappa lives in the water and grabs you as you walk by the stream.
And then you have to tip the little pot and pour it out. So
something like that. And before the before that you get dragged into the water. Get dragged into the water, you're a goner.
Yeah, I imagine, once they get a hold of you.
We should say something about the latest news in the vampire world. For book fans, there's a brand new annotated Dracula that has just come out this month. I'm hoping to get my copy tomorrow. The author of it is going to be in Burbank, and a fellow named Les Klinger, who's a Victorian scholar, and we're waiting to see how this one does. We also should make note that for the real diehard vampire fan, there's a new edition of the notes that Bram Stoker used to prepare Dracula with. These were hidden away for many years in a library in Philadelphia, and they've now been published with comment and the like by a friend of mine, Robert 18 Visang, and Elizabeth Miller, who's kind of the foremost Dracula scholar in the West at this point. And finally, we should note that the buzz around Hollywood is that Dark Shadows is going to make a comeback.
I heard.
Really?
Tim Burton and Johnny Depp.
Oh, true. In the theaters, it'll be a knockout film.
Yeah. Well, wow. Let's not neglect to mention that there's also the incredible Vampire Encyclopedia by J. Gordon Melton. It is probably in his 50th edition by now.
Well, it's only in the second. I just discovered literally this week that there is a Russian edition that has appeared and a new Portuguese edition in Brazil.
Right.
I had seen an earlier Portuguese edition, but there's a brand new one out. I had no idea that that it had come out in Russian, and I'm trying to track down a copy.
Yeah, they're always nice to have.
Yeah.
Sherry and I just received a copy of one of our books in Indonesian that just arrived, so it's fascinating, and we love it when we go, what shall we say, pages across the borders.
Indonesian.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
Indonesian.
Indonesian. Would that be written in Arabic?
No.
No. Indonesian's its own language. They use Western characters, but they put them together in all kinds of different ways.
Makes for fun bedtime reading, I'll bet.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's fun to flip through and try to compare the pages, you know.
How do they spell Brad Steiger in Indonesian?
Well, Brad Steiger and Sherry Hansen Steiger, they don't change that.
Yeah.
This is the second book I think we've had in Indonesia. So we're the fan base is growing in Indonesia.
We should take a moment to publicly congratulate Brad for having the number one paranormal book of the year.
Hear, hear.
I was really overcome. I had no idea that was, and received a note from them today saying that the voting was overwhelming. I didn't realize they even voted. I thought awarded. So I felt as I wrote to the group, I said I'm very honored and I'm very very touched. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
The neat thing is that this is a 1971 book reissued.
It's another testimonial to the incredible treasury that you have built up over the years.
Well, very kind of you.
Yeah. The 10 Most Haunted Paranormal Books of 2008, Brad Steiger's voted number one. Actually, since 1978?
1971. Gordon, you probably remember the original, Haunted Lovers.
Yeah.
37 years ago.
I'd be hard-pressed to know when it came out, but I remember it was some time ago.
Yeah. 71. And Anomalous did it up with a new cover, and a classy work. And
Otherworldly Affairs. Yeah,
it was ahead of its time at the time, and I think or at least that share of the population that is into the paranormal. But anyway, I thank you for mentioning that, and I feel really greatly honored and greatly pleased.
Sure. Otherworldly Affairs is the name of the book. Haunted Lovers, Phantom Spouses, and Sexual Molesters from the Shadow World by Brad Steiger. I especially like the way they spell the word affairs.
Give it a little cachet there.
Classy. Classy. All right, hold on, gang. We'll be right back in just a couple. This is one of the great unknown
I stole a jet plane
Halloween
being
songs.
Initiated,
yard. I'm going to strap a thing on to my Cadillac car. I got some nuclear fuel from the power plant on the day they was closed for a meltdown.
He's clever, too.
I got an oxygen tank and a fireproof suit, a motorcycle helmet and some freeze-dried fruit. I'm building me a big old launch pad, too. Tomorrow I'm commencing countdown.
He wants to find
I'm blasting
different
off
class
to that
of women.
Venus place. I'll be the only country western troubadour in space. I'm building me a rocket ship to go where warmers don't give no lip. I'm a hauling ass, baby, I'm Venus bound. Here I come, Venus.
Now, Gordon, if you're real lucky and do a little research, you can actually find this on YouTube, and you can watch Unknown Henson portray this amazing song.
Now, it's the only planet in the constellation that's got an all-female population, but they need a man to have relations, and baby, that's the job for me.
That sounds like the guy for the job.
I'm going up there to teach them how to act. Them fine, pretty Venus womans won't talk back. It's an unknown world, baby, that's a fact. And I'm gonna be its king.
Now, see, there was a problem, though, when he got there.
They need a man to help them breed. That means the young'uns will all look just like me. I'm building me a rocket ship to go where warmers don't give no lip. I'm a blasting off, baby, I'm Venus bound.
All right, we're not going to tell you what happens, Gordon. You're going to have to go to YouTube and look up Unknown Henson. And
I'll have to do that.
Yeah, and find out what happens in the end of Venus Bound.
See, we didn't bite you in the neck, but this is how we initiate you to Unknown Henson.
Yeah, there you go. It reminds me of this song I heard on group on comedy on the Comedy Channel the other night. Is singing about I go hog wild when you hog tie me up.
Yeah, that would be an Unknown Henson song.
Yeah, that's the same cat.
Yeah.
All right, Gordon, so what's next for you?
Well, next week is the American Academy of Religion. My institute that I've headed for all these many years is 40 years old next month. And we're having our 40th anniversary reception party.
Where is it? Where is it held?
This year it's in Chicago. We'll be at the Hilton.
Our old stomping grounds.
Old stomping grounds, to say the least. But the Hilton and the Palmer House and the Hilton Towers are the location for the convention this year. So we'll be there to have our little get-together.
Now you get to assume your other identity. Are you going to wear your clerical collar and do the whole bit?
Well, I'll probably not be dressed up in my Dracula costume.
No, probably not.
But, I mean, it's very interesting, you know, the night before is Halloween. Saturday night, the 1st, is when we're going to have our reception party, and the night before is Halloween, so we're planning a little other party to celebrate the other side of my life.
The real spook show is on the 4th, of course.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still in Chicago on the 4th. I had to vote an absentee ballot this year.
Mm-hmm. So, again, your colleagues now who will meet with you in your other life, how many of them know of your vampire existence?
A good number of them do. As it turns out, in the area of new religions, there are a number of people who are into new religions, also into vampires. Antoine Favre, who had the esoteric studies chair at the Sorbonne, wrote the first vampire book after World War II in France. If we had time, I could tell you a couple of humorous stories about him. Massimo Intravigna, who runs the institute in Italy that's like my institute here, is also written one of the very fine vampire books in Italy, and heads up the Transylvanian Society of Dracula chapter for that country. It's a very interesting phenomena that we found. There are a number of vampire scholars who are also into studying new religions.
I've got to ask you, too, is Spiritual Frontiers still active at all in any way?
It is, but it's certainly past its prime. It's moved its headquarters now to Philadelphia, and
really?
it still has study groups around the country and does a couple of national gatherings every year, but it's nothing like it was in the 70s and 80s.
It was really, Jeff, at that time, this was a group made up largely of clergy people from various denominations, and it was, we had some of the most exciting times, I think, just sharing research. I'm sorry to see that era slip away from us, Gordon.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's somewhat like parapsychology, you know, this is not a great era for parapsychology. And,
but it sure is for ghost busting.
Oh, it is. Ghost busting, UFOs, all kinds of interesting stuff.
All right, gentlemen, stand by. We have to take a break, and we'll come right back in just a few. Welcome back, Brad and Jeff, and we're all here, all of you, and Gordon Melton. We want to thank Gordon for being here tonight. Gordon, get some rest. You got a lot of stuff ahead of you. Have fun at the big confab.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks for sharing.
Thanks again, Gordon.
Yeah.
Oh, my pleasure. Appreciate you having me.
Take care of my old hometown for me.
I'll give it a try. We got an important election coming up here this week, as well as the national one.
Yeah. What's happening in Santa Barbara?
Well, the the main thing in Santa Barbara is mental health showed up $5 million in the red earlier this year, actually, about 8 months ago. And so we've been scrambling around as to how to keep from having the mental health system collapse on us. And,
well, a lot of things are going to collapse on a lot of people, unfortunately.
Yeah.
All right. Take care. And in the meantime, again, we always appreciate hearing from you. Thank you, sir. Take care, and we'll talk again.
We'll be in touch soon, Gordon.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Okay. Now, we're going to try, and we're juggling things here. We're going to try and go out to a haunted restaurant in California. It is located in Moss Beach. The formal name is the Moss Beach Distillery. If you click on that in the guests box at rents.com, look under Annette's name, Annette Martin, and you'll see actually just above her name is the Moss Beach Distillery. You can see it. It's quite an interesting looking place. Right on the ocean.
Very nice.
Yeah, and let's see. What do you have for us, Matt?
Hi, how are you?
There she is.
Hi. Well, I'm here at the Moss Beach Distillery, and Lloyd Arbach is sitting right across from me, and I have Susan, the accountant, who's going to tell us a really interesting story.
Wonderful.
We have a picture of the beautiful dining room on their website. Where are you in location of the dining room right now?
We're downstairs. We're below the Fitzgerald room.
Uh-huh.
Can you see that on the map?
No. I'm sure if I've nosed around the site, I could find it, but I'm just looking at the pictures as I click by. It's a beautiful location.
It's one of the newer parts of the restaurant, actually.
I see. Hi, Lloyd. Welcome.
Hi, Lloyd. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
Good.
Folks, you have two telephones, do you? You're both able to hear us at the same time?
We do. I'll tell you, we're really geeky out here in California.
Oh, why? High tech.
We were trying for a third, but apparently the third one didn't want to work for us.
Three's a crowd.
So,
okay.
Are we talking to the blue lady tonight?
Oh, we definitely are, and I have already spoken to her several times, all during dinner.
Now, wait a minute. When did you arrive there? What time did you get there?
We arrived about 6:30, quarter of 7.
Okay, a couple hours ago, and you've already made contact with the
resident? I've already made contact with her, and she was so cute. She wanted to know who that handsome man that was sitting next to me. She didn't know him. And I told her that was my husband.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
But I'll tell you what she said about Lloyd. She said that, he's so much handsomer without his glasses on. So he took them off, of course.
I don't like to reveal my identity, my secret identity, but I did take them off for her. That's right.
Okay, right.
Now, for those of you who don't know, Annette Martin is one of America's and the world's premier, what would you call yourself, Annette? More than a psychic, you're...
Well, I'm sort of a lot of things. I'm a psychic detective, a medical intuitive, a ghostbuster, an author, and an opera singer.
All those things, and you also
have.
Well, tell us about the book. We talked about the book last time you were on, which
absolutely.
I hear is doing very well now.
It is doing extremely well, extremely well. I'm so pleased, and I've been doing lots and lots of book events and lots of radio shows, and just getting wonderful feedback. In fact, there's about 26 five-star reviews on Amazon.com.
Give us the name of the book. I cannot remember the whole title.
Gift of the White Light.
That's it.
By James N. Fry.
All right, Gift of the White Light. Look it up on Amazon. It's a remarkable book. We did talk about that last time. And did I send you a CD, Annette?
You sent me a podcast for... No, you didn't send me your CD. You were going to do that.
I never got your address.
Mario, you no. didn't send it to
Mario.
Me.
Make sure that we get the address.
Mario.
All right. Now the
we should have Lloyd just give a little introduction about who he is for those who may not know.
Well, I'm a parapsychologist. I've been around working in the field since the very, very late 70s. I have a master's degree in parapsychology, one of the with a couple dozen in the world.
Oh, there are not many of those. Where did you get it?
John F. Kennedy University here in the Bay Area had an accredited master's program for about 20 years.
Oh.
I'm saying not 20 years, about 12 years, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It unfortunately ended because of lack of funding or funding drying up, but we had a number of graduates, and you know, we're still, most of the folks in the field of parapsychology have degrees in psychology or physics, and I was lucky enough to get one directly related to the field in this way. I've written a number of different books, 7 books. Most recent one actually has one of the longest write-ups of the distillery out there, and that's called A Paranormal Casebook.
Uh-huh.
It's about a sixth of the book, in fact, about the restaurant and its ghosts. And I teach courses in parapsychology, both locally here in the Bay Area and also via distance learning. I do a lot of TV here and there, especially a lot with Annette. We do investigations together, of course. And I'm also a psychic entertainer. On the other side of things, I'm kind of the anti-Randy in some respects.
That's for sure.
Now, wait a minute.
I'm a chocolate maven, so how about that? She's an opera singer, I'm a chocolate maven.
All right, Lloyd, I got to ask you, what define psychic entertainer a little bit more?
A psychic entertainer does entertainment that looks psychic or could be psychic, I guess. We are psychic simulators in some respects, mentalists. It's known as a branch of magic, but it's not really. It's much more psychology and much more related to the real stuff than it is to magic tricks in that sense.
I got it. Very good. Okay.
Mentalist.
A mentalist, Kreskin.
Right, exactly. You know Kreskin? That's kind of what I do.
Very good. All right. Hang on, gang. We'll take a break. Come back. Hold on, Annette. We have to run to a break here, please. We'll come right back. And then we're going to set the stage and tell everyone about this restaurant and the ghost, which Annette Martin has already contacted and had a little conversation with tonight. We're going to try and do that again while we're live on the air with her in just a few minutes. Okay, we're back with Annette Martin and Lloyd Auerbach, who are on location at the Moss Beach, California distillery, which is haunted. Lloyd, just tell us in your view a little bit more about it. Set it up, and then we'll go right to Annette.
Sure. The restaurant was actually built as was a residence first in 1926, and 27 was taken over by restaurateur and, I guess you could say, bootlegger, Frank Torres, known as Frank's Roadhouse and Frank's Grill for different times. It was kind of the main place that people came for alcohol during Prohibition here on this part of the coast.
Huh.
And it boasted enormous number of politicians from all over the state, a lot of Hollywood types who come up here for its early days. So it was really very well known and well protected too. I mean, it was never raided directly, nothing like the Chicago places.
Right. Where is Moss Beach?
It's about a half an hour south of San Francisco, actually on the coast, looks out over the ocean.
Yeah.
Just south of, just a little north of a town called Half Moon Bay and south of a town called Pacifica, so it's kind of wedged in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the place was very popular during the Prohibition era, and during that time a woman, from what we gather from the local historian, from locals who have been here, basically the story that has come down is that a woman was working in the hotel, which was next to the restaurant at the time. The hotel itself burned down in the 1950s. But she was working there. She had supposedly left her husband, who was a pretty brutal guy, started working at the hotel and would hang out here. And some of the locals I talked to before I wrote my book told me that their parents knew the folks back then. And apparently people called her the Blue Lady even when she was alive, because she used to wear blue clothing all the time. She started falling in with the piano player, who Annette has identified as a guy named Charlie. And at one point, apparently, the story goes that her husband showed up, had found her, showed up here possibly with a couple of friends, but were promptly ejected from the restaurant. But later that night, approached her and her boyfriend on the beach. As far as we know, the boyfriend was struck from behind. He was unconscious the next day, and she was dead. She'd been stabbed. People within a week started seeing this woman in blue walking up and down the beach, and over the months after that, started seeing this figure coming up the bluff, right near the restaurant, and then eventually in the restaurant and the hotel. And
how would she come up the bluff? Would she walk? Would she float?
Would either appear there, or she would be walking up, and then she would disappear from people's view. In other words, she would be in front of them and then just would disappear. I don't recall seeing any accounts or hearing any accounts from anyone who reported her appearing out of nowhere, but disappearing they definitely reported at that point.
So they do see her approaching then.
Yes, they did. Now she hasn't been seen in that context in a very long time. In the late 70s, the previous owners, actually, who were living here in what's now the office, reported that there was an upswing of physical activity. There were less sightings of her, more physical activity going on, as if she had somehow learned to do that. And she was very helpful, in fact, to the previous owner. She would help her find pencils if she needed them, check. There was a nice story about looking for the checkbook, and the checkbook just dropped down, apparently, from a top shelf where the woman's husband had put it right in front of her, and there was nobody else in the room. And I recently heard from someone who was working here as a busboy who actually was a friend of the son of this previous owner, and he reported similar things actually at the same time. So current owner John Barber took over in the early 90s, and which is when I got involved in the place. And I worked here with a number of different psychics over the years, Annette probably most often since the mid-90s, and gotten some very consistent information that has been proven out in very, very odd ways over the years. So,
how would you describe this, the disposition of the Blue Lady, the ghost? Nice,
she is,
happy,
she
friendly,
is
prankish,
playful,
serious?
Playful, flirtatious, according to some of the psychics, including, I think, Annette, raunchy. she was appearing as when she was seen in her classic blue clothing, until one of the folks I brought here first was a psychic from Japan, a medium from Japan, who during the show, as she's having a parent conversation with the ghost, started pulling out some fashion magazines and showing nobody, essentially, pointing out some current fashions. And later on, a few months later, people started reporting a woman in black cocktail dresses and more current clothing. So she learned fashion. I guess partly responsible. I'm partly responsible for that.
She's not supposed to be expanded her wardrobe.
That's right. Expanded her wardrobe. That's correct. That's correct. She's a little bit more modern.
Okay, Annette, now tell us what happened earlier, and then we have a commercial coming up in about 7 minutes. After the top of the hour, we'll see if you can ring her up again. Now, her name is?
Her name is Kate. She likes to be called Kate, but the actual name that we got for her was Elizabeth Claire Donovan.
All right.
Okay.
Has anybody been able to check that name out yet?
Hold on one second here. Lloyd can tell you a story about that. Okay,
right.
The Elizabeth Claire.
Well, Elizabeth Claire was a name we kept on getting from the various psychics. I actually got it from a couple of the locals too separately before it had been publicized, and didn't actually get a last name. But when we were doing a session with Annette, actually with quite a number of people back in 1998, '99, it was a two-night overnight we did here. One of the questions we asked Annette was if we could get a last name, and the name that she gave us was Donovan, though it was kind of an odd reaction when we said that was your husband's name, too. We didn't really kind of get that impression. So that might have been her maiden name. That's what we thought. Actually, something odd just happened this week. I should tell you that one of the psychics I work with, a woman named Ankasha Amente, who's up in Seattle and has been down here. She's from the Bay Area. She's had encounters with Kate. Kate, by the way, flits around quite a bit now. I'm now talking to several different psychics, and one is up in Canada, in fact, who has had visits from Kate, a woman I didn't even know, in fact.
Now, that's interesting. Ghosts don't usually travel around much, so to speak, do they?
Not unless somebody tells them they can. Mm-hmm. And I kind of gave her that hint. In fact, that's my new title is travel agent to the astral plane. if people are bothered by ghosts, just remind them that they don't have a body and they don't have to pay for plane tickets anymore. So it's kind of humorous in many respects, but it seems to work. But Ankasha was told by Kate that Donovan was the name she wanted to be called, that was associated with Charlie. Mm-hmm. So she went online and started doing some genealogy research and found an obituary of a guy named Ernest Donovan of Belmont, locally here in the Bay Area. And in the obituary from 1984 is mentioned Charles of Moss Beach, his brother. I went on today and found that Charles died in 1986, but it is Charles Donovan, and he was born in 1907, so he would have been about the right age in the early 20s when Kate was around here as well.
Right, and so I think this is our guy.
It may be our guy. So it's kind of interesting, a little bizarre coincidence at the last minute here.
Yeah, very interesting.
That's for you guys and your
right.
show.
Right, it's the first time we're revealing it to the public. How about that?
Very
an exclusive.
Good,
an exclusive.
Indeed.
It's an exclusive, right.
Yep. Yep.
Okay, Annette, so what happened earlier this evening at Frank's Grill, or Frank's Roadhouse, as it used to be known?
Right. Well, we came in the door, and we sat down, and I felt Kate right away. And then as we sat down at the table and we were talking and Lloyd came and joined us, was when she came right over to the table, and she wanted to know, like I said before, who that handsome man sitting next to me was, and then about Lloyd's glasses, and then she wanted to know, our children are here with us as well. They're not children anymore. They're in their 40s, but she wanted to know who they were as well, and so I told her. And this evening, she had on a long black dress with a scarf, this very beautiful scarf around her neck that was quite long and very beautiful, and she looked absolutely stunning.
You saw her, Annette, with no problem at all?
Right.
And where was she? Was she standing near you across the room?
She was right near the table. No, she was right in front of the table, actually.
Was she acting?
She came over to say hello.
She came over to say hello.
Was she animated? Was she still just there? What was she doing? Or was she acting like Constance Bennett and Topper?
She was asking questions, and she was asking me, who are these people? Who are they? She knew who I was and who Lloyd was, but she didn't know who the other people were.
And she was fully animated as well.
Oh, absolutely. She's very animated. Oh, my goodness. This is the most animated ghost that I have ever run into.
She sounds like a unique one, that's for sure.
Oh, she is, and I love her. She is just absolutely wonderful. She's so free. She has this wonderful freedom about her, and she loves people. She loves being here at the Moss Beach Distillery because people are happy, they're drinking, they're laughing, they're eating, they're loving the food that they're eating, and she's just enjoying every single minute of it.
How many people over the years have reported seeing her? And do the current restaurant staff report seeing her? Do we know?
Yes. And in fact, I have a lady here sitting right next to me. Her name is Susan. She's the accountant. And she can give you a little bit more information. And she has a wonderful story to tell you.
Great.
All right.
Great.
We have just a minute and a half until the break. So let's hold until after the break so we don't have to have Susan tell it in two parts, if that works for everybody.
Wonderful.
Lloyd, are you able to see Kate at all?
Are you able to see Kate, Lloyd?
No, I'm afraid not. I feel her. I've actually heard her voice at this point.
When you say you feel her, what does that mean?
I have a particular sensation, an odd tingling sensation that I've associated at this point with her specifically, because it seems that when I've been in other cases, I've not felt the same way.
What, does she blow on the back of your neck? What do you mean?
Well, that actually happened recently. It sure felt like that.
Now, Lloyd, tell them the story of what happened.
I was actually at a conference at UNIFCON, which was a big paranormal conference in Pennsylvania. And at the end of the last evening, we were out for dinner, a whole bunch of folks kidding around with a lot of people. And suddenly I was reading the menu, and I kind of moved around quite a bit because I felt like somebody was nuzzling my neck at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The woman sitting next to me who I was kidding around with just looked at me like, you know, what's wrong with you? And a moment later, I got a call from Maria Johnston, who's another one of the psychics who has been communicating with Kate, saying, is Kate there with you? Which was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
A few minutes later, I said something I think that got the woman next to me just kind of, we're kidding around, and she kind of flicked me with her finger a little bit, and I got an immediate phone call from Maria saying, Kate wants to know who that blonde woman is sitting next to you.
Wow.
How funny. That's
traveling
really
disrespectful.
She's traveling, Kate. That's
yeah, she's bouncing back and forth, and she was kind of really mad because apparently I took it in jest as opposed to,
There is no time or space for Kate.
No.
I mean,
she's just a mind without a body. That's right. She doesn't
we'll
need
a plane
ticket.
In a few minutes, if Annette can roust Kate again, and maybe Kate will have a word or two.
I'll bet she can.
Yes, for us via Annette. Stand by. We'll also talk to Susan about her stories as we continue live to the Moss Beach Distillery in California.